This morning on The Long View, political analyst Jill Milner takes a deeper look at domestic violence cases during this period of isolation. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
You know, I have to say, when this COVID thing first happened, I think I came across an article that said divorces were up in China because of the whole isolation thing. And then I saw something similar for Korea.
Yeah, and there's been some anecdotal evidence here, or at least a couple of divorce lawyers talking, that it's up a little bit and they expect it to go up a little bit more. But that's still kind of calculated guesswork here. The bigger message is that intimate partner violence, which is what domestic abuse tends to be called now, from what we know from two studies in the United States since the COVID thing and what we know about around the world, we can say this, that in the United States, these two studies show that domestic violence, intimate partner violence, it definitely went up during the period from about mid-March to into April. It actually started going up before most governments said you have to quarantine, because people started to self-quarantine early. It probably went up about 10 to 13%, more likely among first-time intimate violence situations, at least first-time reported intimate violence situations. And in one study, it said it started to drop in April, but no one knows why, and that's where it ended. The other one didn't say that at all. So on this basis, we can say it definitely increased in the United States. That seems to be following a pattern that's true in places around the world. And it's also very much like what you found in one way, very much like what you found in the aftermath of other disasters, Hurricane Katrina, later hurricanes, Mount St. Helens eruption, that there was definitely an increase in intimate partner violence. The one crucial difference here, and I'm listing these things now because it affects what we say about the rest of it, the one crucial difference in intimate partner violence situations right now is that isolation is the integral part of what you're supposed to do, right? I mean, we all are supposed to isolate, cut ourselves off from other people. And, you know, those of us who are fortunate enough not to be in a violent situation, it's hard for us. But in a situation where you have this kind of domestic violence, you have to remember that isolation and control are very much parts of the weapons that an abuser uses. That is, to control a person, you cut that person off from other situations. So in that way, the potential for intimate partner violence actually increases in this situation.
Yeah, and I think reaching out locally to the Domestic Violence Center, I think they're, you know, seeing the same type of thing happen here.
Well, I imagine the only thing that I've seen reported in the newspapers here is that for roughly the same period that we're talking about, mid-March to mid-April, there was about the same number of cases last year as there were this year. That's not very reliable data, I think, but also the police department did assign additional resources, at least one other detective, in anticipation of it to increase. So it's not, I mean, it's sad, but it's not surprising, because the kinds of things that are associated with this kind of violence are very much the situation here.
Right, you've got these stressors,
yeah,
you know, that trigger, you know,
you
these
bet.
Outbursts.
Yeah, you got anxiety, economic anxiety. You have the fact that drinking may increase. You have the fact that people are not used to being around one another. There's even some evidence about male anger increasing, particularly in economic insecurity times. So you do have, yes, you definitely do have all of those stressors. We don't know that kind of internal dynamics here. I mean, if you want to talk like a social scientist for a second, these earlier studies are really much more about overall data and, you know, incidents. But there's certainly a good reason to suspect that all of these stressors, including, of course, the natural disaster-related stressors, all make it more likely that there would be an increase in domestic violence. And in some ways, you know, I was kind of surprised that it didn't go up more.
Well, that's not to say that, you know, it isn't happening, but maybe the numbers, the cases that are reported haven't been logged.
That's exactly right, that there could be... there could be more. Now, these studies that use this statistics use all kinds of interesting gizmos and tricks. You know, you can trace movement, cell phone movement, and all those sorts of things, and check it against police records. But yes, you always have the problem in any kind of criminal situation that there is a difference between the number of people who report and the number of people who experience it. I think these studies assume that's not going to change very much compared to what it used to be like, but we don't know for sure.
Well, I know with this pandemic, we've seen reports about how alcohol sales have gone up and gun sales have gone up.
Yeah, and that's another thing, that gun sales go up in these kinds of situations. And so you, again, have those kinds of stressors that are around that make it more likely. You know, you can create your own scenario about people getting angry in a closed space, drinking, a fair amount and having the opportunity for a weapon. The interesting thing is that most other crime rates have dropped. The rates for other crimes have tended to drop around the country, but this one has gone up, and you can kind of understand why there's the difference. A lot of those other kinds of crimes involve the opportunities to be out. Not all of them, because homicide can be very much a part of what's happening inside your own home. But still, a lot of other crimes, robbery, traffic offenses, anything else, depends upon you being out and about. That's not what IPV depends on. IPV increases because you have more of these stress situations.
Yeah, and I think with, like, property crimes, right? If everybody's at home.
Yeah, everybody's at home. That's right. You don't have to rely on one person keeping watch or the alarm system. Yeah.
Well, I know, I think it was a Psychology Today report that talked about, you know, there are fewer people out on the street. But in my neighborhood, I don't know about that. It seems like there's four times as many people out walking around.
Well, that's right. I mean, it depends what you mean by, yeah, there's a lot of people, even compliers, you know, walking around. You know, what's interesting, of course, and kind of scary, we're living in this sort of natural laboratory experiment because it's constantly fluid. What we found between March and April may change pretty much between April and the end of June as people begin to go out and about more. That may affect everything that I've talked about here. But I think the bottom line is that it's not surprising under the circumstances that there has been an increase, and it's also disappointing but not surprising that it caught most governments off guard in an attempt to try to figure out how to respond to this virtually unprecedented situation. A lot of people, a lot of government officials, were just clueless about what you have to do in order to handle this. No one really, I shouldn't say no one, it wasn't much thinking to consider the fact that the kind of social infrastructure that people rely on, people who are abused as well as anything else, the outside social infrastructure for reporting, for example, schools, or for just kinds of respite, libraries, church, they were really cut off. And once they're cut off, and it just increases all this kind of isolation. And there wasn't much thought given to that kind of thing. That seems in the battle for, do we have enough ventilators? Are we going to have to build temporary hospitals? That one kind of got lost. But it turns out that that's another factor.
Yeah, and I know that, there's talk, too, about how, you know, this impact with the isolation affects, you know, child abuse when you're at home, because
yes,
if the kids aren't at school, the teachers, you know, would normally, you know, notice things and could investigate further and report. But
well,
you know,
not,
it's a whole
not
other
only
thing.
Could they were mandated to.
Yeah.
So you had, you know, you had those sorts of things. There's some interesting, a little bit of interesting research about that thing about in New York, that some of the some families, African-American families especially, felt more comfortable now because they're constantly getting hassled by the child services in New York coming in the house and inspecting and all those sorts of things. How worried they were constantly about about government stepping in, and now with the absence of that, they feel more relieved. Now, before people listening to this dismiss that, remember that that's the similar kind of argument that's made in regard to the police, that the police treat us African Americans different, and it's worth at least thinking about the analogy here about the fact that child services can also be disproportionately unfair in certain directions.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, what happens though over the next month or so.
Oh yeah, and I hope we watch it more closely here. I think we've been kind of lucky because the problem, the general issue here has been less limited. But I think and the irony may be that we don't get an increase because people begin to start getting out more, but that instead what we see is an increase in the incidence of COVID.
Yeah. All right. Well, stay safe, Neil.
You too. Stay well. Stay safe.
All right.
And take care.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
Bye.
We'll check back later. We have been chatting with Neil Milner, retired professor of political science and contributing analyst of our segment, The Long View. For links to the studies on domestic violence, head to our website, hawaiipublicradio.org.